Hello, my name is Emma Felice, and this is Uncommon.
This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Are you an entrepreneur or marketer who needs help making podcasts, video, or animation? Perhaps you don't have time to manage a freelancer or the budget to deal with an agency. Well, Neural Media can help you with simple and affordable content creation, saving you time and money by taking away the pain of producing that content. To learn more, head to neural.com/media. That's neural.com/media. Play around with our pricing or request a callback directly. Listeners to the show receive a special discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON. Welcome to another episode of Uncommon. My name's Jordan Michaelides and I'm your host. In this episode, I have for you Emma Felice, aka Toki Doki Traveler. She's a YouTuber, host at Tokyo Creative, Twitch streamer, and all-round Nintendo gamer girl. Representing Australia in the most important category of J-vlogger, this Paul Rudd-loving former emo from Brisbane is what we all need in our daily life. She's my equal favourite YouTuber in Japan, along with Chris Broad, and has given both Lauren and I a perspective on Japanese life that I think no one else really has living in Tokyo. We couldn't help but want to pick a brain on our latest trip to Japan, and that's exactly what we did at the lovely Spaces in Omotesando. We covered a lot in this episode, including loving Paul Rudd, expat life in Japan, emo phases, finding her voice, what she loves about Japan, and her creative process as well. If you liked the episode, do leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts. Please, please, please. We're trying to go from 76, I think we're at the moment, to 100. So jump on there and leave us a review. Share with your friends. Take a screenshot. Post on your Instagram story tagging us at @uncommon_show. To watch the episode in full, search Uncommon Show on YouTube. And don't forget to like and subscribe. Show notes and all previous guests are at neural.com/podcast. That's neural.com/podcast. Thanks for listening, guys. I do hope you all enjoy this conversation with Emma Felice. Emma.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. I was trying to think of like icebreakers to get us started, and we've got so many, from asking questions about fridges to a rating system. So you had a question in one of your, you sort of, what was it on? It was on Tokyo Creative Play.
Mm.
And they asked like questions that are a bit taboo, right? And it was,
yes,
what was better, Chris Okano or Chris Broad? And my question was, on a rating of 1 to 10 and 10 being Paul Rudd, how Paul Rudd are Chris Broad and Chris O'Connor?
Like, compared to Paul Rudd, they're both zero. You can't even reach Paul Rudd level. He's truly above us all, man.
Yeah, he's very, very funny.
He's charming.
We've become obsessed with, we've always liked that whole clique, Paul Rudd and sort of, who's the lady that has the two young girls and the director and this family? They're always involved in those films. And he makes most of the films that Paul Rudd is in. They're highly associated with each other.
Oh, no. I you got to look it up. I'm so
like,
sorry.
I feel like we can't leave people hanging here looking at it. But we've started following them on Instagram, and holy shit, like, what a family, a group of people to be involved with.
Yeah.
Because they're just so fucking funny.
I mean, sometimes I see groups of people, I'm like, I wish I could just
be in there. That?
Just let me in and say hi.
Well, this is what this podcast is about. It's about getting in there, into those little groups. No, it's, I know what you mean. Like, why is he your favorite, do you think?
I don't know. He's just very charming. He has this kind of sense of humor that I find a lot of other people on television and movies don't have. Yeah. Have you seen the clip of him? He's always on Conan and he always does the same joke where he'll say like, roll the clip from my latest movie. And it's always the same clip of this old movie where a kid rolls down a hill in a wheelchair and then there's an alien at the bottom.
No, I've never seen it.
If you haven't seen it, please look it up. It's just,
okay, we'll link it.
Oh, it's so funny.
So Paul Rudd rolling, that was him.
Rudd Conan joke.
Okay.
I think you could search.
That's funny.
It's a very particular sense of humor that I cry every time I watch it.
I just, yeah, it's, there's something about comedy, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like, it's just one of those things, like, comedy is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I get there's a comedic sense in a lot of the work that you do as well.
Yeah, a little
like,
bit.
You
yeah.
can say, like, come on, the outro for all of your videos has been like you with a sort of ice cream thing on your head.
Yeah. Sometimes I think, like, does this still match the channel? And I'm like, I got to keep it forever, I think. Even though it is, it's quite random.
You've got to, it's got to stay. It's got to become a meme. I reckon it should be out there more. You should be basically creating like a character around this
only,
ice cream head.
From now on, only ice cream head videos.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to ask was, well, actually there was a good question that came in. It was about favorite Pokemon.
Right.
Now, this is a very serious question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I feel like for you, surely? Oh,
well, I grew up with Pokemon. I do love Pokemon. Yeah. So my favorite is actually Mew, because as a child, I would imagine myself as Mew and just being able to fly around and like have a good time.
So it wasn't the psychic element? It was just
flying? It was just flying and like being cute.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Mew was always like the dream for me. I loved Mew.
Have you seen the recent Pokemon film? But no, Detective Pikachu.
Which one? Oh, I haven't.
It was terrible.
Really?
They really butchered it.
I hear some people being like, oh, it's really good. And some people hating it. I just saw it and I'm like, I don't think that's my kind of deal.
Nah. I mean, we're big. We grew up on Pokemon, had the cards.
Yeah.
I just feel like it looked like a bit of a cash play. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we're getting a payday on this. Let's go do it.
Yeah.
It was like the storyline was really average and it just doesn't make much sense.
Well, I feel like so many movies these days are kind of cash.
They are,
it's just a live action remake of this really popular movie and we'll play on your nostalgia feeling.
Yeah, like Harry Potter 13 or something like that. Although I wouldn't say no to that. See, actually, you know, I shouldn't say that because that's more of a universe thing.
Yeah.
I don't mind shows that are like they've got their own little world.
Yeah.
World building, but it's when you're getting like Fast and Furious 8 that it's a bit like,
right.
Well,
I'm just thinking of all, sorry, Disney, don't sue this podcast, but you know, Cinderella, Beauty and the Beast,
Aladdin,
live action Lion King. It's like, do we really need this?
You know, I looked at this thing the other day. Someone linked this on an Instagram story. Apparently, on IMDb, the last like massively popular 9 out of 10 or like 8.5 above movies. The latest one was like 2013.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's sort of saying that there's not many original, that's an original film, by the way.
Right.
So there's not as many like really well-made original films being made.
Yeah.
Which is, I feel like sort of where the business is at, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, do you use Netflix, right?
Oh yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like everything is going towards the Netflix and the Amazons, the world just throwing out lots and lots of billions of dollars at TV show type storylines.
Yeah.
As opposed to movies.
I don't really watch that many full movies these days, I think.
Yeah.
The last one I saw was Midsommar, which I actually really enjoyed. Did you see Midsommar?
No, but I saw the trailer for it.
It's
how long did that come out?
I have no idea, but I saw it recently.
Have you seen the new Joker?
I haven't.
Okay.
I saw there was a lot of big uproar in the media about it being like, oh, it's going to cause
shootings and stuff like that. Yeah, I think it's just the media being a bit hyperbolic to get advertising dollars. But apparently it's just like a really – I saw Vanity Fair had like a sort of a behind-the-scenes thing and the director was talking about what it's about and how he's planning out scenes, which I've become obsessed with like cinematography lately, getting into video and all that. But – It looks like it's a really interesting critique on societies. It's sort of like Black Mirror.
Okay, yeah.
Which I love Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how you got here.
All right.
You know, I feel like it's today would be what, like 4 or 5 years-ish in
Japan?
It's
actually, so February 1st will be my 4 years.
Okay.
So it's like 3.5 and a bit.
4 year anniversary in Japan.
Yeah.
I got a sense that you as a kid, I mean, you grew up in suburban Brisbane, but you did Japanese at school.
Yes. Little research.
Yeah, we research a lot.
Wow.
Well, we were debating. So you had a note there in a previous interview about how your dad introduced you to Studio Ghibli.
Yeah.
And we were debating which film it was. And my money's on, what is it? The classic, Spirited Away.
Spirited Away.
It was
okay.
That.
Well, I think I was quite young. I'm pretty sure the first one I watched was actually Totoro.
Ah.
Yeah, because I was pretty young. So we started with Totoro, and then we had like a big box set, so I'd watch like whichever ones we wanted. And I, did you know Pompoko?
No.
So that's a Studio Ghibli movie that's really intense. It's about some, do you know Tanuki? It's like a raccoon dog, yeah, kind of thing. So they, it's about them living in the forest, and the forest gradually gets destroyed into the city, and then they try to fight back for their home, and it's
the,
really
the
brutal.
Animals, yeah?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I remember seeing, because I did Japanese at school up until I was about 16, and we watched a lot of these films.
Yeah.
And they were intense.
Yeah, there's a lot of violence and strong themes in them, and I watched it as a kid. I was like, oh, cute cartoons. And like, I watched Grave of the Fireflies when I was quite young, because okay, I was like, a cartoon. But yeah, there's a lot of intense Ghibli movies out there, but I did start out with something quite tame, which was Totoro. So
yeah, I feel like Studio Ghibli or food is sort of the gateway drug to becoming a bit of a Japanophile. Yeah, weeb, bit of the kind where it would be like Japanophile.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, weeb is the correct term.
Yeah.
And I remember, yeah, that was one of the things that Lauren and I, when we first met each other, we were about 18, and it was Japanese food. We were obsessed with Japanese.
Yeah.
And the area of Melbourne we grew up in didn't have great Japanese, so we'd always go into the city and eat it. And I became obsessed with Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know Anthony Bourdain?
Yeah, yeah.
And he died recently.
He rest in peace, yeah.
Yeah. But he had an amazing clip about
the Lawson sandwiches?
Yes. Him with David, what's his name? The chef that was like super, super popular here for like 6 months, and then he left, and now he's got like a noodle bar. And he's had a kid recently. I always forget the last names.
David.
I always know the first. David... There's Cho. I think it's David Chang. That's
okay.
It. Cho and Chang, because those two, there's one's an artist and one's a chef, like a really world-renowned chef, and they hang out together all the time, and they were best mates at Bourdain.
Oh, okay.
And they actually did The Day in the Life of a Chef was the thing that Anthony Bourdain is the only other thing that he's ever done outside of a Belvini sort of commercial promo series. It's the only thing he's ever voiced over.
Oh.
So he did that for David Chang because they're like the best of friends. But yeah, it's this clip, we'll link it for everyone, but he talks about how coming to this life before and after Japan. That's what he says. It's sort of like going to the original, like for Eric Clapton, when sort of Jimi Hendrix came to town and he took acid for the first time. That's what he was saying, what it's like. It's just another world,
yeah,
which I'd say so. When you first came here, what was sort of the thing that you connected with?
So the first ever time I came here, first time I ever came here, I was quite young. It was just a stopover, and I was here for like 3 days, but it was so intense that I don't remember much of it except for being in the convenience store and being like, wow, food. I came here majorly for the first time with my high school. We did like a 2.5 week trip around. We went to like Hiroshima, Kyoto, Tokyo. We went down to Kyushu. It was super intense. And I just remember feeling just overwhelmed the whole time. Like, it was really fun, but it was like, there's so much going on, but yeah, mostly overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And I was like, at that point in my life, I was like, okay, you know what? I love Australia. I'm ready to go home now. And then I was like, I'll come back here on a holiday. So yeah. I came back with my parents. And then one day I was just walking down a road by myself. I just went for a walk, and it was just a highway, and there was a box of sweet potatoes that had fallen off a truck, and there were sweet potatoes all over the ground, and I picked one up, and I just got like this feeling of, yeah, I could live here. It's a dumb story, but it was a street potato that kind of like just inspired me. And after that, I was like, I got to live here. I got to live here. And I have no idea why it was that moment.
Wow. So it must have been, maybe it was the sounds, I don't know what could have triggered that, but it's funny because now I reckon the title of the episode is How a Street Potato Convinced Tokidoki Traveler to Stay in Japan.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it was the fact that I was by myself for the first time in a different country. Like every time I traveled before that, I was with my parents all the time with friends. And this time it was just by myself. And I was like, I can do this. And I feel strong by myself. And I feel like I could make it by myself here.
Yeah. I know you studied Japanese, but why did you think I need to live somewhere else in Australia? Was there sort of like an itch inside of you in some way?
Yeah, I don't know. So I grew up in suburban Brisbane, and Brisbane, it's a lovely place. Yeah. I think it's great. But, you know, I tried going to Sydney and to Melbourne, and it's like cool, busy city life, but it just was missing a little something. And I still don't really know what it was missing. But maybe when you come to Japan, you kind of see what it was missing. Yeah. You know, it's so crazy here. There's just so much to do and to see, and it's just exciting and it never stops. Mm. And yeah, I don't know what it was, but it was just something about this place that I was like, okay.
Yeah,
I want to at least try.
Are there certain things of your personality that you think really align with the Japanese culture? Because I feel like for some people, it's often that. Like if you're a very conscientious person, you like Laura and I are very organized. When we come, it's just like, oh, I just wish they had this in Australia. Every time we go back to Melbourne, I stop eating food on the train.
Mm.
And Lauren's like, it's okay. Like we're not in Japan. You can can do this. So there's little things that sort of you gravitate towards. What do you feel is that for you?
So there is a certain sense of order here that I think is very different overseas. Just kind of people know where they're meant to be. They stand in line, and if they don't stand in line properly, then they're, oh, you're not doing the right thing. But no one really like gets angry about it. Like in person, everyone just thinks it, you know, it's just
they
kind
sort of just give you this glare.
Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, we all know that you're the bad person. But I don't know. It's very controlled. There's a system to things, and sometimes I love that, and it's something that I really relate to, and sometimes I am very frustrated by it because it is a huge part in other parts of the culture where it's like, hey, I want to do this thing, am I allowed to do it? And they're like, ah, it's not exactly the way it should be. And you're like, oh, this is just this little thing wrong, does that mean I have to still wait the 6 weeks that I'm supposed to? And they're like, yeah. So it'll be just like little things where it's like you could bend the rules and there's no consequence, but you just have to always stick by the rules, which can be very frustrating.
You saying that just reminds me of the Japanese banking system.
Oh, don't even start.
Yeah, which I know was one of the things you spoke about. And so, is it Dogen?
Did you see his recent? Yeah.
Yeah, holy
so
shit.
That's it.
Like, all right, so you want to close your account? Okay, 2,500 yen, which is like 35 Aussie dollars to close your account. You want to send money from a friend to this? You want to send it from you to a friend? It's going to cost. Like, I couldn't believe that there are fees to do things that should be free.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And the interest rates here are really bad.
Yeah.
So it's like
0.001%
Yeah. So it's like,
so that is real.
Yeah. So if I want to save money, I can't do it by putting it into a bank account and letting it sit and gather interest. Like, that's just not feasible here. Yeah.
What do you do with that? Like, I guess having come from the finance industry, it's something we know pretty well. Most people buy the Mrs. Watanabe bonds is like a big thing in the financial sector. They're sort of like household bonds that get sold by the government to citizens, and they're really, really, it's just better than having your money in a bank, right? There's stocks, but there's not much.
Yeah. So
can you buy a house?
So you can buy a house here if you have the full amount. If you buy it
with just the money outright.
Okay. Yeah. So you can buy a house, but if you want to get a loan, you have to be a permanent resident here. Yeah. And to be a permanent resident, there's a lot of different, one of the ways to do it is to be here for 10 years consecutively. And consecutively, I mean, like, if you if your visa starts to run out and you decide to go on a working holiday visa, because that's the only visa you have left while you figure out something else, it will then take you back down to zero. Mm. So this is what I've learned. There could be other information out there. So sorry if I'm incorrect, but this is everything that I've...
Yeah. I think you're right. We had a developer for our company. He's based in Tokyo still today, and he's a Kiwi, actually. And he's been there for like 10 years, and he was just saying these little things, like you can't own a home. And we'll get into that later because I want to talk about the permanence of being an expat.
Right, yeah.
But I've got to ask, you're talking about having that affinity with the Japanese for getting annoyed at people who jump queues and stuff like that, which is a very English thing, right? And I know that you've got that English background.
So I
have been thinking about, what's sort of the earliest memory of your own childhood with your parents?
I was born in Australia.
Yeah.
I only found this out recently. I was in the womb when my parents were still in England.
Oh, really?
And so I was, for some reason, that like changed my life. For some reason, I was always like, oh, I'm Australian. I've always been Australian. I'm like, no, I was there. I was in England. For some reason, it like meant so much to me. But
it's a story.
Yeah. But my sister, was born in England, and then I was born in Australia. And I don't know. It was, I had like some neighbors growing up, and now neighbor would babysit us, and they had a pool, and we had chickens.
Yeah.
Love chickens. They're a great pet. Very nice. Have eggs. And yeah, we didn't have too much.
Yeah.
Just like a little house.
Which part of Brisbane did you grow up?
Oh my God, where did I grow up?
Or like when you left Australia, which part of Brisbane did you live?
So when I left Australia, I usually was in, we were North Side.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was in Sandgate.
Yeah.
And before that I was in Brighton. Okay. And then before that I was in Narangbar.
Ah, yeah.
And then before that I was in Windsor. So my mum moved from Windsor to Windsor.
There you go. Yeah. Brisbane's a cool city. I don't mind it. Like both Brisbane and Adelaide have this nice feel about them. Like they're clearly, obviously a lot smaller, but they're a lot more colonial. Like, the, you know, if you go to, when was the last time you went back to Australia? I think you were there like
year,
a year ago.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been to Melbourne in the last few years?
It's been a while.
Because if you go to Melbourne now, it looks like Hong Kong. Like, it's insane. Okay. The amount of high-rises that have been built, I think there's, if you go to one block, there might be 10 different high-rises that have been built. It's nuts.
Yeah.
And, but you go to Brisbane, it's still sort of, it has maintained still like a lot of that, the old buildings. And it's still got that real colonial, you know, the palm trees pineapples and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Is there a particular lesson that you have from either of your parents that you hold with you today? Like maybe it might be a principle or like a line or a quote that they would always say.
Oh, geez. Oh, that's tough. I don't know if there's like a line.
Like as an example with my parents, it's undoubtedly hard work just because by necessity when I was growing up they didn't have much money and they had to work really really hard so I just saw them working all the time and like I did little things like I'd be sitting in their factory that they owned you know for a couple hours like 4 or 5 years old so for me it was that was sort of like one of the core principles I've gotten from them.
So for me my mum has a lot of wisdom and like a lot of common sense with things. And my dad has a lot of hyper intelligence. Like he's a very smart guy. And so I guess from both of them, if I need help from something or if I need advice, I know which one to turn to in which situation. So yeah, I don't know if there's like any particular set thing that I remember.
But there's different traits that you definitely to pull from them.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I know you spoke about, your emo phase as well in a prior interview.
Yeah.
You had a strong emo phase.
Oh, very strong.
Do you know what's funny? There's an Instagrammer, Matt Cutchell, who has like a merch brand now called Emo Isn't Dead.
Oh, I approve.
It's very, very funny. We'll send you a link later on.
Thank you.
Lots of My Chemical Romance. So it had me thinking about...
Oh, bless their souls.
Yes. I actually wrote down, like when every time he's done a new one, and the classic bit is like his girlfriend who's clearly from like LA or something like that. They were made famous from Vine, so they're comedians, basically. And he'll always do some overly dramatic thing and he plays like an emo song in the background. He's got his black hair on it and his Emo Isn't Dead t-shirt. And yeah, it's good to revisit that stuff. That was such a good era, wasn't it?
It was.
The Green Days.
Yeah. Last time I was in Australia, my mum loves that music too, which is great. So we would listen to it in the car. And when I was in year seven, in 2007, we would drive to my primary school and be blasting like Bring Me the Horizon and
imagine like Jesus of Suburbia going on and you're just like...
Yeah, we would just like headbang on the way to school and like we'd play it really loud and it would... I really loved that with my mom. She always supported any dumb phase I was going through.
She's just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, she used to be a punk in the UK.
Really?
Yeah, she played bass for a band called the Immolato Tomatoes, but because it was in England, it was the Immolato Tomatoes. It didn't really work out, but yeah. So, both my mom and dad were kind of goth punk kind of things, yeah.
Holy shit. If you were able somehow... If you had it in you to find a photo of them and to post it on Instagram of the original punk days, holy shit, that would be funny. Like on a Mother's Day or something like that.
Yeah, I wonder. They definitely still have pictures from it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they always had like safety pins and like
That's
always
so funny.
Wore black and everything.
Do you think, I was thinking about where this sort of drama and acting sort of element came from. You're obviously a bit of an open and creative person. And I wonder if that... that sort of emo-ness meant that it was naturally there. You're more willing to share things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think through emo, I learned that I had a lot of feelings. But through that, I think that, especially after like doing a university degree and doing drama at school and everything, there was a way that I could have an outlet for the kind of feelings and creativity that I had, which actually now is quite interesting because I used to channel a lot of my art and creativity through this kind of angst. And now I'm kind of happy. I'm just living my life and I feel like my creativity is dying down. I'm really worried. I'm like, do I have to be angsty and like have a lot of feelings to be creative?
You definitely don't. I went through a strong period of anxiety in it started when I was like 21, 22, but I've really dealt with it in the last 6 months because it was actually affecting my life.
Mm.
And I can tell you now, it's actually way more, I would say the more angsty you are, the more procrastinator you are.
Right.
If that makes sense, because it stops you from doing anything because you can't sit still or just think clearly.
Right.
And so I found that angstiness is actually really counterproductive to creativity. Because you could, like, if you want to be creative, I'm guessing you've got to be able to sit there and think of an idea and work through the idea for a long period of time. You can't just get up and keep moving around.
Yeah. For some reason, I had this kind of level where it would be like, I'm sad and I'd spend like a day being sad and then I'd be like, let's do something about it. And then I would make a creative video. And I'm like, how did I do that? Like, I don't know how. Like at this point in my life, I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay, I'll make something cool. I don't know where to get my inspiration from these days,
Well, that's an interesting thing I had for you because you spoke about like finding your voice because so much of the – do you find yourself to be extroverted or introverted or a bit of both?
Bit of both, but mainly I think introverted. That's something I was going to say earlier. As a kid, like I only started coming out of my shell when we started doing show and tell at school.
Uh-huh.
But normally – I would never express things. If my mom had to always study me as a child because if something was wrong, I'd go from to like a little worried face, but like nothing was, I would never like scream and cry or anything. Yeah. If I ever got told off, I had to be told, now just so you know, you've done something a little wrong. And I would be so upset, but I could never be yelled at. I was very fragile and I didn't express myself much. But then when it came to show and tell, I came out of my shell and just was so happy to share things with people. And so my mom could kind of see that and was like, okay, let's kind of go into this avenue and see if we can get her to express herself a bit more.
Do you remember like a particular show and tell at all?
So my mom does. I brought my mice to school. I used to keep mice.
It's like Lauren had mice and yeah, that's like the cliche thing, right? You bring in your pet and you talk about your pet.
So I brought my mice and I think I talked about them and I was very excited and I talked about how I didn't bring my other mouse because she died and she would have smelt a bit. And like, I don't know. My mom talks about that as like the first time that I was really like,
She must love that as a memory.
Yeah.
Like just it must be really funny to see your kid talking about like things so matter-of-factly.
Yeah,
like, yeah. Like, we can't bring her in because she's dead.
Yeah, and I think none of the kids laugh.
She smells. Like... Oh, my God. That's so funny. When I talk about finding your voice, like that was something you spoke about sort of you studied acting and you had this opportunity to study YouTube personalities. That was like the project you had.
Yeah.
And it's something that we've started with a podcast and now I'm about to start doing my own YouTube channel in line with everything else that we're doing. And it is really, really hard. Like you think, what am I going to talk about? Like, am I that interesting? Like, are people really going to want to hear this thing? And you learn over time that you've sort of find your audience, but I was curious, like, if you had not come to Japan, do you think you would have had the momentum to just start telling a story? Because you did have some vlogs beforehand, for sure.
Yeah, so those I think I deleted most of the videos that I did when I was at university, but I did videos and there were actually quite strong opinions on feminist issues. And so I deleted them because I was like, I don't know if I want that on the internet as like the starting point for Tokidoki Traveler.
Probably not.
Yeah. But I don't actually know. I do think like, what would my path have been if I stayed in Australia? And a lot of my friends, you know, they're actors and they go with certain theater companies or do commercials and I see them and sometimes I'm like, that could be me. Would I have done that?
Mm.
And when I think about it, I don't know if I would have done YouTube because I don't know.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like a chicken and egg problem.
Yeah, it's so easy because it's like, what do I make a video about? Oh, I go outside and it's awesome.
Yeah, and it's easy to think about it in hindsight as well because you don't know what your life would have been like if you'd stayed in Brisbane. Like, who knows? Like, maybe you met some other YouTuber at an acting class and then they became your friend and then you realize, holy shit, they're doing a lot better just on YouTube as opposed to this stunning stuff, you know, like you never know regard. But it's interesting because I just found it is such a, I feel like for you in your life, a major inflection point without a doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
And one thing you spoke about in that interview is showing the real you. And I guess I was curious, how is Emma today? Because I saw it today when I woke up and we were just scrolling through YouTube. It was your video from like last year, I think, talking about where you were in life. So how is Emma today?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm actually like, I was thinking about it yesterday. I'm actually like mentally, I'm pretty awesome. I've got, you know, a really stable kind of position at the moment. But I got, sometimes like most of the days today, I'm just really happy and living my life and having a good time. But I just got asked a question. I'm going to be asked a question next Friday by my boss. And he's going to ask me what my career goal is and what I want to do in the future. And that blew my mind. And I was like, oh God, I don't know what I want to do. I have just been so happy living in the present recently that I'm like, oh goodness, I have no idea. Like, I don't have a big goal.
At all, nothing.
I don't. Sometimes I think if I like, I could do anything in the world. What would I do right now? Like, I could move to England, try to be an actor. I could move to America, try to make it. Or I could be a housewife. I could, you know, go try to make a tiny house somewhere and live in the forest. And I'm like, I'm just kind of happy just doing what I'm doing.
I think if you're happy doing what you're doing, you need to double down on it.
Yeah,
I think that should
so
be
that's
the
thing. I'm so scared of committing to one thing. I do YouTube. I work for Tokyo Creative, so I host for their show.
Yeah.
I do Twitch. I do acting and modeling on the side. Uh-huh. I do like a bunch of stuff. And I'm so scared to cut it down to one thing because I'm like, what if that thing doesn't work?
Well, the way I'd look at it is I think you should just double down on the things that you know are working and giving you. Like, it may be that Twitch and modeling support what you're already doing with YouTube and Tokyo Creative. It doesn't have, like, you know, when we first started doing this podcast, it was nothing. We were absolute no, like, you're a nobody when you start out. As you know, when you jump on YouTube, it's just you're learning what this thing is. And I feel like doing those things could be nice ways to experiment. But, you know, I mean, doubling down more on being here in Japan and not feeling the need like you've got to go back to Brisbane or London or whatever.
It is kind of a weird feeling of being like, what could be, what could be, what could be, and just being like, it doesn't matter, just focus on where you are. Because to be honest, there's a lot of people in Japan that live here that aren't so happy that they live here. There's a lot of people who
expats or locals?
Yeah, expats.
Okay.
They're quite angry at a lot of things about Japan. There's a lot of complaining on the internet and being like, oh, this isn't good enough. And so even days where I'm feeling pretty good about life here and everything, I'll go on Twitter and I'll see people be like, oh, this sucky thing happened to me today. Japan needs to get better at this. And sometimes I think they're like, oh, I wish I could just go home. And I'm like, oh God, should I be wishing I could go home? Is this as bad as they're saying it is? And I start to second guess myself. It's
honestly, do you know, I found Twitter, I've completely started to check out from Twitter.
Yeah.
It's very, I just find it to be so negative.
Yeah, 100%.
And I find that like, Instagram, we've been experimenting with TikTok recently, which I know is massive here.
Yeah.
We'll show you a few clips later on.
Oh,
it's,
my God.
It's so funny.
I haven't even got to TikTok yet.
Oh, you have to.
It's
massive in Japan.
I've been watching a lot of TikTok. I haven't decided to dip my toe in it or anything.
I was the type that used to watch YouTube clips of people doing like reactions to TikToks and bagging them out.
Yeah.
But now I'm
times
the person.
Times have changed.
Yeah, times have changed. But I think it's like the next. It is definitely the next platform to challenge Instagram without a doubt. Yeah. And they've, because it's got way more discoverability, but I've noticed that Instagram has started, you know, like if you've seen recently, you can actually create with Instagram stories now. More people are finding you now.
Okay.
Yeah, there's like these elements that they've just integrated in the last day when they put in like dark mode that means.
Oh, yeah, I haven't even switched to dark mode yet. I'm so
I didn't even. Okay. So it must be when you switch on the actual phone. because okay. I switch over the phone to dark mode, but my Instagram is like dark mode. I'm like, I didn't select this. Weird. This is strange.
Yeah. But one thing we don't have yet is Instagram Music. In Japan, really? Doesn't work. And so every single time somebody posts like an Instagram music based thing, it's just silent and they're just like mouthing along to something. I'm like, I can't tell. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've noticed this thing recently in Australia. Like some songs don't work.
Oh, okay.
It must be a licensing thing.
Here it's none of them. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, nothing. Just Instagram music is not available in your region.
Yeah. So this is how TikTok gets around it, is the clips of 15 seconds. So 15 seconds is right. Like with Shazam, it's like considered a sample. That's how they get around it. And that's why it's so popular amongst people as well. But you touched on a really good point, the sort of the expats complaining, the permanence element.
Yeah.
Like we did have a few questions, but that was the major thing I was thinking about. Like I said, we had that developer that we worked with and, you know, he spoke about the fact that he's been here for 10 years. He can't buy a house just yet. Like he still has to meet some further requirements.
Yeah.
There's sort of the tricky element if you've got like a local partner is like part like families being accepting of that partner depending on how conservative or not they are.
Right.
So I guess just the thing I was thinking about is what how much permanence is there for you here, do you think?
It's a tough question because after life here for 4 years, you can really tell that things can change in an instant. So there was a point for me this year where I messed up my visa.
That's right.
Yeah. And so there was a point where it was like, oh, I might have to go home tomorrow and I might be banned for 1 to 5 years returning to Japan. And it's like, oh, life can just change like that without you realizing that it's going to happen. So as much as I want there to be permanence and safety here, there is kind of an aspect of it where it's like, I don't have the right to permanency yet. Like I haven't made it yet so that I can feel permanent here. But yeah, the one thing to aim for is permanent residency, which, yeah, there's different ways you can get it. If you're married to a Japanese national, you can apply for it after 3 years. Mm. If you are a specialist, like an engineer or something, and you come here and you get a specialist visa, you can get like a 5-year visa. And after 3 years, you can apply for permanent residency. Really? If they want you, you can get it. Yeah. But if you're like an English teacher or a freelancer or, you know, they're going to see what points you have. And the points are kind of like how important is your job? What's your level of Japanese? All these kind of things. And if you're a normal person, you got to wait 10 years, have a lot of good points. Make sure you do your taxes. Oh, you got to do your taxes. Pay your pension. Do your health insurance. All that stuff. And they're going to check you and then see if you're worthy or not.
It's really tough because, I mean, comparison to Australia, I think it's 3 years, 2 years maybe for PR.
Yeah.
And all you need is a working visa or be studying and then you can move to some sort of, I don't know if they still have them, the 457 visa. They might be renamed to 451. Anyway, someone will pull me up in the comments for sure.
Yeah.
And then you're basically a permanent, like we have so many expats who are like Uber drivers and they're just doing that to stay right. in Australia and then get their PR, which is like, really, you're like a freelancer when you're doing Uber.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I talked to my mum about it and I was like, what was it like moving to Australia? She's like, oh, we got to be citizens in a year. And I was like, excuse me.
It's ridiculous. I mean,
like how?
The Brits had such a good setup, right?
Yeah.
Because Lauren's mum moved out. She can get a British citizenship because apparently women who are born before 83, their children can automatically get it. You've got to pay the £1,000 or whatever it is to get registered. Do you think that, because see, if you were to become a Japanese citizen,
right,
have dual citizenship.
No, so I would, sorry, Japan, I will never become a citizen because I wouldn't be allowed to be an Australian citizen or a British citizen.
Yeah.
I do know someone who has talked about possibly becoming a British citizen, a Japanese citizen. It's, because I don't know if I can say who it is.
It's up to you, but we can cut it out later.
It's Dogen.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So a friend of mine said that he might want to become a Japanese citizen. And the main reason is taxes. So he's American and he has to pay American taxes and submit his American taxes.
On top of,
every single year for the rest of his life. Like there's no way to get around it except for if you're not a citizen of the United States.
You've got
to
renounce your citizenship.
Yeah, and so he's planning on being in Japan forever. Mm. And so it's like, well, maybe that might work in your favor then.
It's a very, yeah, that, for Americans, it's really tough. Mm. There's a few Americans that I've been following that live over here, and that is a real dilemma. And I remember just working in the finance space, and you learn a lot about tax law, and literally your only option is to renounce your citizenship.
Yeah.
And so what often happens is in those instances, if you don't know that you're going to be permanently in Japan, you've got to get some sort of other passport that temporarily, well, that's what they suggest, that sort of works out for you. Like the common one is from Panama, because they have really good, like if you're a slightly wealthy, if you've got some money, then it's very easy to get as a citizenship, and it's still mm-hmm. not far from the mainland of America.
Right.
So it's a real tricky one. I totally understand that. We've got it pretty well in Australia, not having to pay taxes.
Yeah, I just had to submit myself as a non-tax resident of Australia for tax purposes. Uh-huh. And yeah, I mean, I still submit my taxes.
You're still gonna do it.
I'm still gonna do it, but it's not like I don't have to pay for like my Japanese earnings, and I don't really earn in Australia except for interest. So uh-huh. that's just.
Do you get reciprocal rights with like things like Medicare and all that sort of stuff?
Wait.
I guess not. Like, we've got Medicare. Does the Japanese government and the Australian government have some sort of arrangement where, like, there's a lot of European governments. I was in Italy, and I remember, like, I had to go get, like, a check because I thought I had something wrong. Mm. And I had to go see a specialist because we were there for, like, a month. And Medicare is accepted there because they have, wow. like, reciprocal rights.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's something like 40 countries in the world that have it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I had no idea. So
you're going to just pay all out of pocket here?
For
medical stuff and whatnot.
If you're an Australian citizen or...
You're here sort of on a working type visa, right?
Yeah. So I get health insurance. Uh-huh. If you come here on even a working holiday visa, anything other than a tourist visa, you have to legally be on health insurance.
Uh-huh.
So I'm on the... I've got work health insurance, but you can be on like the national health insurance. And it's pretty good. I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You pay what is relevant to your income every month. And then you pay, I think, a quarter of the cost uh-huh. in person when you get it done.
So they've got like universal healthcare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what it's called.
I mean, does everyone pay the same? Is it like sort of paying Medicare? I'm guessing there's private and public options, right?
There's different insurances if you have like the national health insurance or if your company has like a work insurance kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it's like a cross between America and Australia, it sounds like. It's interesting. I'm going to go look it up after.
Yeah, but it's good. I like it a lot. I've seen people complain about it who are from like the UK and they have like the NHS, but I'm like, you know, it's not that bad. It's pretty good.
I mean, look, we've got it pretty good in Australia, I feel. Like the healthcare we have is amazing. However... I don't know if you've been paying much attention, but insurance is getting like a big shake up at the moment. Like,
oh, okay.
Did you see that Royal Commission stuff? There was like this, the whole finance sector is getting a real big shake up because banks like CBA were charging people when they were dead.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's like, it was Yikes. Been like all over the news for the last 3 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah. They had like this insurance scandal where they were not paying out like life insurance when people had died or... All this other wacky shit.
I saw one story on that, on a specific case where they didn't get the life insurance from someone who'd passed
away. It was really, really bad. And so, like, that's been a big thing in Australia the last few years. So, there's a lot going on with that in that regard. Like, Qantas now offers insurance.
Okay.
So, it's really competitive now.
Speaking of insurance, I don't think that I have insurance on my stuff in Japan.
Really?
There's a typhoon coming.
I asked
all of my friends and they're like, we don't have insurance. We don't have insurance. Like, no one has insurance. And I'm like, have I missed something?
That is a really interesting cultural thing that I love about Japan. Like, how you can just leave stuff anywhere and people, like, you know, we jumped on the good old Skyliner into Shibuya mm-hmm. and... You just put the bags there and you just know no one is going to touch this bag.
Yeah.
You can leave your bike unlocked. No one is going to touch this, generally.
Yeah.
It's quite amazing.
It's really good. I think, you know, there are certain areas you have to be careful of. And,
of course.
You know, it's a city. And I do wonder how it's going to be after the Rugby World Cup finishes and after the Olympics. I do wonder what changes are going to happen, how uh-huh. safe it's still going to be. But for now, yes. It's pretty great.
Yeah. It's not a universal rule, but it's an interesting, like you just see it in little ways. I find like other smaller cities, like the Kyotos of the world have, you see that more. as well. Like, oh my God, there's been so many times we've been going to a restaurant and next door was a house, but they look the same because they're all those sort of front terrace style Kyoto architecture. And you open it, it's like, oh, this is someone's house.
Someone's house.
It's like, whoopsies. And they're like, looking at you like, what the fuck
cooking,
are you doing?
Like, oh.
When you think of living in Japan, what are the things that you really, really love about it? Like, you know, if you were, like, what do you think that tourists and locals miss alike when they're here?
Oh, like, tourists and locals, like, what do tourists miss that I get to experience?
That you get to experience, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, just living here, I get the chance to breathe. So I don't live like in Tokyo. I live closer to another neighboring prefecture.
Uh-huh.
So it's a lot more relaxed. There's a lot less people, but it's still got like a really nice community feeling. There's a lot of like local festivals where they'll even tell you like, come join. And wow. People will chat to you and people are more willing to be there and have a conversation if you're just like in the neighborhood. I love being able to just like have my little home. I love my little home. It's like I get to go home and I'm like,
now, how many arm lengths is it at the moment?
Quite a few, actually. I now live in 43 square meters.
Okay, well, that's
a bit bigger than eight, yeah.
That is seriously decent. Like in Melbourne CBD area, we live at, I think it's like 95 square meters.
Okay, yeah.
So that's big for Tokyo, I feel.
Yeah, and you know, because I don't live in the center of Tokyo, it's quite cheap, I think, for the size. Yeah. We pay 83,000 yen a month.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's like, and because we split it.
Combined or each?
We split it. So it's 400 bucks
Jesus.
A month.
That's so easy.
Yeah.
Like now Australia is so expensive.
I know.
We pay like $3,000 a month to live in East Melbourne.
Yeah.
So, wow.
I mean, I saw a review like on the internet. This thing came out recently that was like the top like expensive cities in the world to live in. And Tokyo was one of the top. They said that the average is about $2,000 a month.
For rent?
I think they said, yeah, for rent, but they said like a 2-bedroom average apartment. And I'm like, 2 bedrooms pretty big here.
That's big, yeah.
Who would have a 2-bedroom? Like, I don't know. There's a lot of good deals.
The way that they do those things is always whack, isn't it? Like most livable city. Well, how do you define that? What are the parameters? Or like cheapest city for rent? Like, does it stop here?
Yeah.
Where does it stop? Where are the outer city limits? Because like Tokyo is really four cities onto itself, isn't it? It's sort of like four center areas.
Yeah, I mean, I think even Hachioji, I think, do you know Takao-san?
Yeah.
I think that area is still Tokyo.
Really?
Pretty sure. Was it? I hope so.
And then you've got places like, is it Saitama, which is not far from here?
Yeah, yeah. So that's
and they're
like
big.
Yeah, and they're Yokohama. So close. Everything's so close. That's what I love about Tokyo. It's like, oh, I want to go to this kind of specific feeling town.
Yeah.
I could just go there within like 2 hours.
That was one thing that really dawned on me the first time we were here.
Mm.
And we're in Shibuya and we caught a train to this area around Odomachi. We went to sort of Tokyo Station.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd been on it on the Yamanote line. So we're above ground, 20 minutes on a train. And it still felt like we were in the center of Shibuya. And that's when it really dawned on me. Like, this is a massive city.
Yeah.
And there's things that you can do in Shibuya that you can never do in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's the thing I love. And on the point of things that people miss, I think one thing is getting out to the regional prefectures.
Yeah.
Like, so I proposed to Lauren 2018, January time, sort of January, Feb. And I feel like being in those regional areas is seeing a lot of what Japan can be like because people aren't as rushed.
100%.
It's sort of what you were saying about living in sort of a more suburban area.
Yeah. And part of me does think in the future, where do I want to live in Japan?
Yeah.
Do I want to live like, it's called like Inaka is like countryside.
Yeah.
So do I want to live Inaka? Do I want to have like my local grocery store and I know everyone and I live in you can get really nice houses.
Yeah.
But the thing is they're really cheap because you know, the population density is going down, so they will never gain value.
Yeah.
So that's the hard thing about buying property in Japan. You'll probably lose money on it unless you're living there and then you can just enjoy
it. Yeah, it's not an investment. It's like a consumption. Unless you're buying in Tokyo, it's not a good idea. But even then, in Tokyo, house prices haven't apparently they haven't changed for the last 20 years. As in, like, per square meter, it's still the same cost.
And with the updates in earthquake safety and everything, houses lose value really quickly because they're like, oh, then they're no longer the most up to date with safety features and everything and like insulation. So a lot of the modern houses these days are better, and they're probably going to last longer in the long run. But yeah, anything that's like, earlier than 10 years ago, it's just losing value.
Yeah. I mean, look, I totally... What are those banks that they have where they're sort of the homes that have been the abandoned houses?
Oh,
thing?
Yeah, you can buy a house for free.
Yeah, we saw that. And there was actually one that was really... There was a house there for 200,000 yen.
$2,000.
Yeah. And it was a bit disheveled. Like, you'd probably need to put in, like... 50,000 Aussie of work into it.
Yeah.
But still, that's like 52,000 for a house.
It's crazy.
The people that we go visit in Nagano, who are sort of like our friends now, they've just had a new kid, and they kept their house, like their Airbnb, closed, and they're like, oh yeah, come along, come over, we'll hang out and all that sort of stuff. They bought a really, really old, like, it's not a ryokan, but it's sort of like
a Japanese style house. Or?
Yeah, it's in like Omachi near Matsumoto in Nagano, and it's sort of like a place, like a sort of a lodging that you'd stop by if you were going to go ski, like up on the mountains around in Nagano.
Yeah,
but it's just stunning, and they bought it for like peanuts.
Yeah,
absolute peanuts.
It's so cheap here. Yeah, it just depends what. Your
What's
goal
your priority
is.
In life?
Yeah.
And look, they were investment bankers. They worked around the corner in Otomachi at probably Citibank or something like that. And he lived in the Gold Coast. So he went to the Gold Coast for 2-3 years. And I think that's where they met. And then they came back to Japan. He's just like, I'm sick of being a salaryman. Let's just like go out to the country, buy a house and rent it out to people. And so this was Airbnb. They started on Airbnb in like 2015 or something like that. But it's a beautiful life because, you know, they got two, maybe I think it's three kids now.
Mm.
Well, definitely two, I feel like. They built like a little cafe on the side. Chi and Hiyashi, they're amazing.
That's awesome.
People have to go visit them. We'll make sure we link their property on Airbnb. But I can totally see that.
Yeah,
Lauren and I have always fantasized about that sort of lifestyle.
I went and shot a video in a place called Dogashima, and it's just like clear blue, amazing waters. There's like these women who are fishermen who go diving to get like sea urchins and stuff. It's just this really magical town. And I was like, let me just look for houses in the area. And I found an apartment, and it's like, 90 square meters? And you can buy it outright for 75,000 Australian dollars.
Oh my God.
And I was like, excuse me, is this my future? And it was weird because I looked at it and then I looked up and it was literally in front of me. Like, I just happened to be looking at the apartment and I recognized the building. I'm like, hey, there it is. It was like overlooking the ocean and everything.
Wow.
But it was older. And I was like, I don't know if it's a good investment to have like an old... It's hard to get to as well.
You can seriously do that though. So there's a channel that we love. It's a Canadian guy who built a house in the wilderness sort of not far from Alberta in Canada.
Mm.
And he'd retired. He'd sort of gotten himself healthy. He was very unfit, like, and he'd lost a lot of weight. So he sort of got like a wake-up call. I think he might have been quite sick, like maybe it was a heart attack or stroke or something like that. So he got very fit. He's not a carpenter, but he might have been a builder. And he built this cabin. And so he lives outside of Alberta, Canada. And he's got a YouTube channel, which has probably got like 2 million followers now because people just watch.
People love that. I love it.
He's got like one of these sort of tripods that he sets up, and he's got his dog in here.
Oh, the dog is the best bit.
Yes.
Where it's like the guy and the dog, and they're just like living it out rough, and they go and chop wood and like eat berries and stuff. Oh, my God.
I am terrible. Whenever I get into interviews, I always forget the names of things.
That's all good.
It's like this really bad habit that I've got. But we'll make sure we link it. But I'm pretty sure it's called my... it's not my regional life, but...
I might have seen it. I've seen some channels with the dog and the guy.
And he's chopping wood and stuff
Or
most
he's like,
of the time.
He's like spending the night outdoors.
My self-reliance.
Okay.
Does that look familiar?
I don't know. I'd have to...
It's a cute little
cabin.
I know.
Oh, that's so cute.
And the lighting and everything. And
yeah.
He goes... Like, he doesn't doesn't buy any meat from the supermarket. He'll only go like hunting deer or things that he can get from the wilderness and stuff like that. Yeah. And then he has like a little veggie patch, but then obviously it gets snowed under during summer. So he's mainly eating like cured meats and all that. So it's pretty wild. And so, yeah, he's got like... My self-reliance has got 1 million subscribers.
Wow.
350 videos. I can really see a future like that where it... And I'm seeing more and more with YouTube because you know how YouTube favors like 20-minute videos, 11-minute videos that keep people on the platform? There's more and more videos now that are winning that are sort of... They're very unedited.
Yeah.
People just filming sort of an area or thing that you don't get to see often.
Yeah.
Like another channel I love is an English guy. It's called Bald and Bankrupt.
Okay.
And he just basically goes traveling through Eastern Europe. And it's like documentary style. And he's just sort of filming it. There's no dubbed over music, nothing, and no sharp cuts. It's just him cruising through
the
country.
I've been liking videos lately that haven't really got people talking. They're just kind of showing things. And I'm like,
there's a bit of an ASMR about it.
Okay, I have been watching ASMR. I didn't think I'd be into it. For ages, I was like, I don't like it.
What's your ASMR thing? Like, is it goo?
ASMR mukbang.
Mukbang?
But for weird foods, like foods that shouldn't be foods. They make like hairbrushes. And so they make food that looks like objects, but it's actually food. So they'll get like a hairbrush base and then they'll fill it with like this gummy candy and put like spaghetti in it.
Wow.
Like, and when they crunch into it, it sounds like they're eating a hairbrush. But it's just, it's spaghetti.
That's weird.
It's so weird. And they have like glue sticks, but they fill it with milk pudding. And so they're like biting into like a glue stick. And I'm like, oh my God.
What is this channel?
You just type in ASMR hairbrush. It'll come up. There's so many of them. This is so popular. And I was going to say, I don't know why, but I know why.
Why do you know why?
No, because I get it.
You love it.
I love it.
So what is it about it, do you think? Is it, there's something pleasing about it. I'm trying to work out what it is.
I don't know. I'm just watching it like, I ate that hairbrush.
This looks fun. This looks interesting.
It's like different.
It's sort of like, did you ever have that as a kid where you, this sounds so stupid, but like you licked a battery? Have you ever done that?
I have, yeah. I've licked
that is the weirdest fucking thing ever. Yeah. But I just was like, my brain was like, what does that feel like? Or what does that taste like? I must have been like 6 or 7. And then as soon as I did, I was like, oh, that's weird, but I want to do it again.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
It's okay. I ate chalk as a kid.
My brother hates me saying this, but he ate cat biscuits as a kid.
Oh, wow. Like he enjoyed it or he ate like one and was like, no?
No, him and my sister actively enjoyed it. And we were laughing about this because he's in full denial. So we caught up for dinner like before we went away. And just imagine like a sort of suburban home in Australia, Melbourne. It's sort of like there was a garage and we'd keep the cat biscuits and the cats had eaten there and whatnot. And I'm like, where's Hayden? Where's my brother? And so I'm like walking around. I'm like, the door's slightly open. And so I go in the door and just imagine this. It's him and he's got a mouthful of cat biscuits and he's like this. And he's got these really gappy teeth.
Why is he doing it with his mouth open?
Because he's like 4 or 3 or something like that.
Oh,
and
my God.
He might have even been 2. I don't know. But he's like got real gappy teeth and he dribbles a lot and he just ate like...
Oh, my God.
Like... It was the funniest fucking thing. And it was like he dribbled it all down and sort of like on his...
You should make a meal for him with secret cat biscuits. And if he's like, oh, this is really tasty, what is it? So you can be like, cat biscuits, and you love it. You can finally catch him out.
He's now like into... he's not keto, but he's like really low carb.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's diabetic, so he had to find a diet that didn't give him too many spikes, so... Mm. Anytime there's carbs around, he's like, oh, is it carbs? Like, yeah. He's like, oh, okay. And then he just walks off. So I don't know how I could trick him.
Oh,
maybe wow. I could get some inspiration from these ASMR channels.
Yeah.
Now, thinking about content, I've got to ask your style, your creative process. Is there any rhyme or reason to it?
Oh, God.
Like when you're doing a vlog for Tokidoki Traveler.
Yeah.
What are you thinking? You're like, okay, it's been a while. I need to make something. Or I've got an idea and then you write it down in like your notes and then you've got like a list of things that you want to talk about. How do you sort of think about that process?
So it depends how on top of things I am. So today and tomorrow and the day after, I'm vlogging the the typhoon.
Okay.
Like that kind of thing. It's like, oh my God, there's a typhoon coming. Oh, I can vlog it. Awesome.
Content.
Hey, content. But it like, you know, it just, that kind of just naturally happens. But when it's stuff like, oh, I need to make a video. What should I do? I sometimes just get kind of stuck. I'll take suggestions from the audience, or if I'm completely out of it, I will make like a day in my life video, because I know that people really enjoy seeing that kind of stuff.
They love that. That's easily some of your most popular videos.
Yeah.
A day in the life.
It's crazy. But also I get scared because my day in my lives aren't that conventional, because I don't go to work and come home. Sometimes, you know, I do go to work.
Yeah.
But a lot of the work that I do is just editing that video.
Yeah.
Or like I am working when I'm doing a day in my life, but I get worried that people will watch it and be like, she doesn't work very hard because she's just going to the shops. And I'm like, no, this is the working bit. I don't know.
That's so funny. I can imagine like I just some of the questions we got, I can imagine what some of the comments are like.
Mm.
It must be really hard. That's another thing we're talking about while we're getting the coffee and tea and whatnot is being that conduit. Like you're in a really precarious situation because you're a local, but you're sort of not fully a local yet. Because you're not inherently Japanese.
Yeah.
But you've also got people who see you as sort of like an authority on Japan who speaks English.
Yeah.
So and then some people always sort of dealing with both, right?
I'm dealing with everyone's opinion all the time. It's interesting. Sometimes I'll say something and then I can already imagine all these different opinions from all different groups of people.
Yeah.
People who view me as, you know, the authority figure of living in Japan, I know everything, or the person who views me as she doesn't speak N1 level Japanese and she's a piece of crap, or someone who, you know, comes into the channel and sees a white girl and goes, ah, I hate you. Like, yeah. I don't know. There's so many different people with different points of view that sometimes I just get scared to say anything.
Yeah.
I second guess myself every time I start taking a video. If I say something, I'll be like, cut that.
Do you have like a way of breaking through that? Like, is, you know, when I was saying before about process, do you always say, all right, I'm going to make one video a week or one a month? Or is there something that you, is there saying that the some sort of rule that you can never break at all or not?
I don't lie. It's like I don't like tell. I always try to keep it as truthful, I guess, as possible without revealing too much personal information.
Mm.
When it comes to upload stuff, I tell myself I want to do one a week, and then I suck at that. I suck at it. I can't. I just can't do it because every week is different. Sometimes I will be called away and I will have to travel for 6 days straight.
Yeah.
And then I see other YouTubers and they're traveling. And then in the evening when we finish at like 10 p.m. and I'm like, all right, I'm going to just chill out for an hour before we start filming at 6 a.m. And they're like editing. And I'm like, why are you editing? It's like 10 p.m. And they're like, oh, I'm just getting some work done. And
how
I'm,
can you do that?
How? I'm like, am I just a tired person?
Yeah.
Do I require more than a human needs to require?
I think you know your bounds.
Yeah. And I guess my bounds are just a little bit small, like limited than other people's.
Yeah. It's actually, that was part of dealing with that anxiety, is coming to grips with the fact that I'm not the person that can be doing 16-hour days repeatedly. I need to sleep like a minimum 8 hours a night.
Yeah.
And that's like, as you know, my brother can sleep 7 hours a night and he's perfectly fine.
Yeah. My mom sleeps like 5 hours and she's like, all right, time to go. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, I don't know how people do it.
I got no idea, but some people can. And, you know, I've been told by those people, oh, wow, you sleep for 8 hours? Oh, that's a lot of sleep. And it's like, nah, man, it's a good amount of sleep. Screw you. Go to bed. Like, I get frustrated because I'm like, well, this is just my level of what I need to do in order to give my best work the next day.
Speaking of work and being pulled away for 6 days, I've got to ask, the guys that you've worked at Tokyo Creative, you speak about them regularly in the actual videos.
Mm.
I guess I'm curious, what have you learned? Because it's a very unique scenario, right? To be working with so many influencers at any one time.
Yeah.
And I know I can't ask who's your favorite, or because that's some of the questions we got, right? It's like asking who's your favorite child.
Yeah, it's like, hey, out of your friends, publicly say which one you like and which one you hate.
It's
like,
so bizarre when people ask that shit. So what have you learned from being in that environment in particular about being a creator?
I know from my standpoint, I'm learning to be able to adapt to different situations. I think one thing that's always been good to learn is witnessing other people and seeing how they work and knowing that I want to be the easiest person to work with.
Okay.
I'm not number one. I see all the people that work behind the scenes and all the people who organize everything, and then suddenly I turn up and I'm on camera. I'm below them. They work so much harder than I have to work. And so, I mean, I learned this at acting school as well. Yeah. Actors who come on and are like, I'm the most important person here. It's like, get stuffed. You can be replaced. There's people here on sound and on lights and on editing that are so important that it's like, you have to be as humble as you can and as kind to everyone as you can. Otherwise, you know, you're going to make the whole process so difficult.
Yeah. And it's such a brilliant, it's a very humble principle to have, I think, and it's the best. It's what will give you longevity in the industry, perhaps, because I know what you mean. Like, you come into production, you're like, wow, okay, there's a lot of people involved in just this video.
Yeah.
And how many hours of work and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just there for the filming process. I mean, luckily, being a YouTuber, I know what effort goes into editing the videos, and so sometimes I can be in front of the camera and be like, oh, they need to know this at this point, or I need to act like this in this point, and keep it on track because I know what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see, like, there's been major evolutions in the way that you create? Like, I could see that when you first started with that, I could see the cinematic sort of impact, because you would do these really lengthy videos that, you know, wouldn't be as regular.
Mm.
This is before you went to Japan. And they would cover like a larger story. And then you sort of migrated towards vlogging. And over time, that vlogging process has changed quite a lot. Obviously, you can actually see the, you know, like I watched some of the older videos and you can hear the old camera with the lens. What was that? What camera was that? Everyone used to complain about it.
Casio CX 123, blah, blah, blah.
That's right.
It was awful.
And everyone moved to the G7X. Yes. And that was like the camera.
The camera to have. It still kind of is the camera. They have a new G7X now.
Do they?
Yeah. I got the G7X Mark II and now they have the G7X new, blah, blah, blah. It's beautiful. It does the same thing. It's got a bit of a wider lens, I think.
What are you on to now?
I'm still on my G7X, but I also have a DSLR.
Okay.
So I use a Canon SL2 body, which is the KISS X9 in Japan. And then I use a wide angle 10 to 18 millimeter lens. And I use a Video Mic Pro mic.
Do you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I'm going to grab this bad boy.
Mm.
This thing, we've been just playing around with this recently. This is for the new iPhone, because the iPhone camera.
Oh, it's got a stabilizer. So,
That's basically your gimbal.
And
the Rode. So that's the Video Mic Pro Plus.
Right.
Which attaches onto that. It's amazing. It's as good as shooting on a DSLR with like a Ronin gimbal. I just bought it before we came to Japan because this new 11 Pro came out.
Oh, it's so beautiful. I've been watching some videos taken on the 11, and it just...
They're stunning. And like the wide angle lens, it just sort of tells me that, because we had other questions saying, how do I get into vlogging? And it's always the questions that are sort of like, give me a reason not to start.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
My answer is always start.
Just do it.
Do it. You just use your phone.
No one's watching.
Yeah. No one is watching.
Like, look at, if you, here's a good point. Your videos, the more recent they are, the bigger they are. Obviously, because you've got a bigger audience.
Yeah.
You go back to your old videos, they're not as big, but they're still got a decent view, like amount of views, because obviously people have gone back and watched, right? But it emphasizes the point that no one is there at the beginning. You've got to just start somewhere.
Yeah. I filmed on my iPhone 6, my iPhone 6S Plus, when I first came to Japan. The volume was so low on it. Trying to turn up an iPhone volume is really hard when you're editing it.
Yeah.
And I got, by accident, I think I got a 16 gig capacity phone.
Oh my God.
And so every time I filmed, I had to take every single file off the night after, and I could only film like a few clips at a time. It was so bad.
Wow.
But yeah, you have to start somewhere. You just have to start. I do get messages from people saying, hey, I just bought all this equipment, I'm going to start vlogging. And I'm like, all right, if you have the money, then go for it. But just so you know, you don't know if it's going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I hope that it's a good investment for you, but...
Yeah, we spent 2 years really finding the style and technique for interviews.
Mm.
And we only just moved to shooting video. And it takes time. It takes years to learn this stuff. And I guess that goes to my question of how do you find your style changing at the moment, and what do you sort of see the future of your style?
Yeah, I edited a video recently and I just did, I have kind of a formula where I'm like, okay, I've got all my clips. It's a video for a sponsored video. So I want to do it as nicely as I can. And I will have like an intro of like the best clips and have some music playing and then be like, I'm enjoying this place. And then I'll start and blah, blah, blah. And I edited it and I finished it. And I was like, I don't want to do it like this anymore. I'm like, this feels not up to date with the way that YouTube currently is. Uh-huh. And people watched it and they liked it and everything, but I was like, I need to change it up a little bit. A lot of people I see now, they do like one clip at the start and it's like one funny clip from it and then they start saying stuff. Or they just start. People are just starting these days. And I'm like, should I just have nothing and then be like, hey guys, and then just go, what? Yeah. Should I cut the hey guys? I don't even know. Like, I just
need to
change it up. I've
noticed that over time, you now it's gone straight to that sort of Tokidoki Traveler illustration, and it's actually shorter now than when it's like, I feel like I've noticed you've cut down the time in that.
I don't know. I think it's still the same length, but I turned it down a lot. Okay. It is the highest pitch. As someone who has edited every single video for like 3 years with that, that first kills me.
How did you get that done originally?
Oh, my sister was an animator.
Oh, wow. You're
so lucky.
Because you were one of the first persons to have like a proper intro.
Yeah. And sometimes I've talked to her, I want to change it up by just changing the outfit.
Okay.
So like keep it fresh. And I'm talking to a music artist right now about changing the intro. And it's the same tune, just a pitch down a little bit with some different instruments because I can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
That first note. Like drills into my brain.
Really? I know what you're saying, but like there's also like an element of we've been just doing a lot of like, so on the back end, we have an agency that we do work for clients, and sonic branding or audio branding is becoming a thing. Like, do you remember the days of like you'd put on your Nintendo, your PS4, your Xbox?
Yeah.
You know the sound.
Yeah.
I feel like for you, that sound is sort of your sound.
I just get so worried.
Like, if you're going to do it, maybe you could bring the volume down a bit. But I didn't even notice, to be honest. It's probably because you got these headphones.
Yeah, it's just because I have to listen to it so many times.
Yeah.
I mean, I always add it at the very end now. I used to add it at the start. I'd be like, here's my intro. And now I feel good about my video no matter what I do because I got this cool little intro. But every time I would start the video again, I would be like, beep. Just feel like it's just ingrained in my brain now.
I want to get into some rapid fire shorter questions, but before we do that,
oh gosh,
let's talk about I think the final thing is showing reality, because this is as Lauren and I get more into creating content ourselves and people ask about what we're doing and blah blah blah, how can you give someone like Lauren confidence that they should just get out there and show everything? Because sometimes she'll be freaking out, she's like, oh, my skin's not good here, or you know, I don't want to do this because whatever the reason may be. How do you sort of tell that individual that you just... Because that was what you spoke in Shizuka's interview, that a lot of vloggers just hide certain things. And then when they get to 10 years in their relationship, they split up and everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened.
Yeah. So I think if you want to be the perfect version of yourself, I think you should do TV because that is kind of like as good as it can get. But with YouTube, people aren't really looking for perfect people. People love train wrecks. People love people with like acne and seeing their recovery journey or seeing any kind of improvement in their lives. If you start off with something that is perfect, anytime you slip up, people will be like, oh, it's not good as it used to be. Like, I think showing realities kind of keeps people in check to show that you are a real person and you are just going through stuff all the time, like everyone does. So I don't know. I think that for YouTube, it's important to just acknowledge the realities of the situation rather than putting in all that extra effort to try to hide it.
Yeah, and that was, I think, one of the key things that I highlighted as part of your career is something you've done really well is you understand attention. And you, I know that you know that because you sort of found that thing with tiny homes, single-sex hotels, a day in the life. You sort of started to hone in on the things that really garner people's attention.
Yeah.
And more of it is about life, like everyday life.
Yeah. People like life. People like interesting little things about life. People like seeing other people's lives that are different. You know, people are interested in people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, these rapid fire questions.
Oh gosh, okay.
These are fun. They never become rapid fire. They always turn into 20 minutes.
Okay. Good.
All right. What's in the fridge at home? There's probably a good one.
So much.
Yeah.
So if you guys don't know, there is a typhoon coming. Mm-hmm. There's a what is it? It sounds like haggis with a B. Haggibus?
Haggibus?
Okay.
Haggibus.
Haggibus?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a typhoon coming, so I just did a big stock up. I went to the supermarket. I have water and vegetables, meat and...
Things to cook.
Yeah. And stuff in the cupboard, you know. I'm fully stocked for the weekend, so not going to leave the house, just going to eat, play Zelda and chill nice. Out, so I'm excited.
Nice. Have you got the new Switch?
Yes. Oh, okay. No, not the... Oh, yeah, I do have the new Switch. Not the light, but the new improved... Switch with the longer battery life.
I saw my mate got Zelda on Switch and holy shit, like that's some nostalgia. Did you ever buy like the booklet for when it was on 64?
No.
Did you ever play it on 64?
I have played the 64 version, but I was quite young, so I watched my dad play. And any time that the zombies came out at night, I would have to like hide my face because I'd be so scared.
It was scary.
Yeah. And Majora's Mask, the opening sequence with the mask coming, I couldn't deal with that. I'd be like, press start before the mask comes. And he would wait for it. And I'd be like, ah.
It is like, I remember back to it. It was a bit of a scary, particularly when you go up to those sort of the rock lava mountain area. But it was such a fun game. Such a fun game.
Yeah.
But the booklet I'm talking about was like the cheats booklet.
Yeah.
You could buy it at the newsagent.
Yeah.
All right. What are your five favorite non-musical sounds?
Cicadas in summer.
Okay.
They're really loud. So loud, but they're kind of like, oh, it sounds like Japan. what do I like? I like the sound of rain.
Okay.
Sound of rain. There's so many sounds. Deep frying things. Deep frying things at a restaurant.
Can I suggest one?
Yes.
What do you, the sound when the train comes?
Oh, wait, like the little jingles?
The jingle.
Yeah. Does that count as music though?
Because
there's some really good ones out there, but unfortunately, I do think that counts as music.
Maybe it's the actual train itself when it's arriving at the platform.
Yeah. Oh, there's a sound to my local train line that sounds. It sounds like someone complaining if when the train shifts a little bit. It's like. So I like that sound because I'm like.
Oh, that's fucking gold. There's so many good, like, even in Japan, you've got these. For someone who doesn't know the language, the rapidness of the way that the language is spoken and signs and how everything is voiced is quite amazing.
Yeah. Like, have you been past Takeda no Baba yet?
No.
It's the Yamanote line. It goes like, Ikebukuro, Mejiro, Takeda no Baba. And they say it so fast, it's Takeda no Baba.
Where is it near? Which station?
It's Mejiro, Takeda no Baba, Shinokubo, Shinjuku.
Ah.
So it's like...
We must have.
Yeah. Just listen out for it because they're like, Tsugi wa Takeda no Baba. When I first came to Japan, I was like, what is that station?
I love that. I love the announcement of the stations, like Amato Sando, when they print, like it's so pronounced.
Yeah.
It's that is one thing. Like if you're a bit of a linguist, if you like language, the Japanese language is quite nice to listen to on the
ears. Yeah, I find it's really musical.
Very musical.
I went to Korea recently and I was so taken aback by how different the language sounds. And I think it sounds really cool, but it also sounds like they're complaining. Like, I always thought they'd be...
Yeah, it's got that sort of... growing up with like a lot of Korean girls.
Korean, but yeah.
Yeah, they always used to say this word as a chondo. Like, it's got that... You can tell there's like a bit of Mongolian to it, a bit of Chinese. It's very unique in that regard, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. But here, it's like... It's very like bouncy and fun.
It is, isn't
it? I like it.
I feel like I remember saying to someone that Japanese is sort of like the Swedish of Asia, like because they're both sort of like musical. They go up and down quite a lot. But people always say, "Oh, but what about Chinese?" But Chinese is like quite accented.
Mm.
Like it's sort of more like sure, like more front of the mouth sounds.
Yeah.
Whereas Japanese sort of, I don't know how to describe it. I'm trying to think about the word to describe it, but it's less like accented. It's just like very structured.
And here it's very, it's like a lot of strong, what is it? Like ga, ka, si. It with like Chinese and stuff is like shi, like and ch. But here it's a lot of like like arigato gozaimasu, arigato gozaimasu. Yeah. That's like very clean.
And I find like I'm, when I try to pronounce things, like I'm always using sort of the back of my tongue more than I'm using sort of the front area.
Yeah.
If you could have a billboard anywhere in Tokyo, where would it be, first of all, and what would it say?
Well,
what would it have on it?
Okay, if I want people to see it, I'd have it in the Shibuya Crossing area.
Yeah.
I'd have it real big, and it would have me, and I'd be doing a little dance, and I would say, what would I say? Donate to my PayPal.
That's so good.
A link to my PayPal address.
Do you not have Patreon?
No, I don't have Patreon. I consider Twitch my version of Patreon because I like to provide content that anyone can see, but they have the option to donate if they want. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, a lot of people do Patreon that I know, but the amount of effort that they have to put into Patreon is so huge.
Yeah.
It's kind of daunting. A lot of people send out, you know, packages to people, postcards. They do a lot of extra things and it takes up a lot of their time. And so for me, I just, 3 times a week, I sit down in front of my computer and I just chat to my Twitch audience.
Nice.
And if they want to donate, they can. If they want to subscribe, they can. But there's no pressure, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a better way of doing it.
Yeah.
I can see what you mean with Patreon is there's still a bit of friction there.
Yeah. It's like, if I have this content, if you want to see it, you got to pay for it.
You got to be a bit of a super fan.
But for me, I'm like, I don't know if you can afford it, so I'm here if you want. And like, I have like little emotes. Like if you want to subscribe, you can then have access to the emotes, but it's not like extra content. It's just like little extra bits.
Yeah. And I think Twitch is becoming more and more important. In general, I mean, we love, Lauren and I love to watch Jake and Bake.
Oh, really?
We don't watch him on Twitch. We love watching the highlights.
I'm seeing him on Friday.
Are you?
Yeah.
We were like, where is he? Like,
he's in Tokyo now. He just came back.
Yeah, because we're going to, you know, we reached out to a few people, but I there was a few in particular that we really wanted to speak to. And I just thought, let's just not go overboard. Let's just reach out to 2 or 3, see what they say. And, for some reason, I don't know why I didn't click on Jake and Bake. I realize now in hindsight, we contacted someone who sort of got like more of a family YouTube channel. And obviously, they were never, ever going to be able to do anything because they're so busy.
Busy.
With kids and whatnot.
It's like, if you're not busy with work, you have kids.
Yeah, you got kids, life. Like, it's all sort of more of a travel channel, but Lauren loves their channel.
Yeah.
Anyway, you live and you learn.
Yeah.
All right, last question for you.
Okay.
What has been the best purchase under $200?
In my life or in Japan?
In general. You could pick Japan if you
under
want.
Under $200. Oh, I have so many awesome gadgets. I'm trying to think. $200. What's something that changed my life?
I can tell you for mine.
Mm.
It's just over $200 by like 20
Close
bucks.
Enough. That's all right.
My AirPods.
Oh, okay.
I love my AirPods.
Mm. Oh, it's $300. Like all the things I buy for like equipment for like YouTube and stuff, it's always like over $300. But that's the stuff that really helped me. I don't really have like any.
How much was the Casio, the original camera that you bought?
I think the Casio, the one with the lens that was like here, and the S's were like, oh, they were awful. That was like $200.
Wow.
Yeah, it was real cheap.
What a fucking good investment. That's what I say every time I meet YouTubers and creators is like, what a, think about it. It's the most amazing, you just could not have done this in any era but this.
Yeah.
To buy something for $200, you know, it's F all money, and then to create a life.
Yeah.
Basically, it's just your time, right? It's quite amazing. Look, thank you for doing this.
No worries.
It's
Thanks
been awesome.
For having me on.
Where can people find you? Where do you want them to find you?
Oh, find me on YouTube, Tokidoki Traveler.
Instagram,
Tokidoki Traveler.
Twitter.
Tokidoki Emma, because Tokidoki Traveler was too long.
Really?
Yeah, for the at.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it had to be Tokidoki Emma.
Sadly. Twitch, obviously.
Yeah,
is Twitch. Is that a new thing, by the way?
I've been doing Twitch for over maybe a year and a half now.
Okay.
But I don't advertise it that much for some reason. I feel weird about advertising it because one time I got a message from someone and they were like, begging for money, fake gamer girl. And I was like, I'm not fake.
Fake gamer girl.
Oh, no. Yeah, but yeah, check it out. If you want to come, like, just come chat with me, because yeah, on Twitch it's a very...
You definitely need to promote that. I had, like, I did all that research and I didn't find it.
Yeah, I gotta promote it more. Because really it's a fun time, yeah. I just chat with everyone 3 days a week. And sometimes we cook food. Sometimes I play Zelda. Sometimes I play a lot of SNES retro games. I'm playing Earthbound at the moment.
Okay.
Which is great. Yeah. So much fun. And yeah, it's a fun time.
Yeah.
Come hang out.
Well, we'll make sure we link everything.
Oh, thank you.
And it's been fascinating to meet an Aussie in Tokyo.
Ah, thanks for coming to Tokyo. And I hope you guys have a great rest of your time here. And
yes.
I hope you stay safe in the typhoon.
I hope the typhoon's not good. If hopefully you hear from us, guys.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much.
No worries.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you for making it to the end. Before you run off, subscribe if you enjoyed this episode, or do leave us a rating. For Instagram, go follow us on @uncommon_podcast. For YouTube, search Uncommon Podcast, and don't forget to subscribe if you're watching this video. Also, give us a like or leave a comment on what you thought about the episode. But until next time, thanks so much for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Are you an entrepreneur or marketer who needs help making podcasts, video, or animation? Perhaps you don't have time to manage a freelancer or the budget to deal with an agency. Well, Neural Media can help you with simple and affordable content creation, saving you time and money by taking away the pain of producing that content. To learn more, head to neural.com/media. That's neural.com/media. Play around with our pricing or request a callback directly. Listeners to the show receive a special discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON.